running up and down. But nevertheless, we have to do it. We hope that you'll accept our
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am duly impressed. Actors wishes to also refer the portfolio committee to the July 2015.
I'm trying to sort out my transport, which was for 10%.
Agnes also wishes to refer the portfolio committee to the July 2015 International Labour Organization report, ILO report, entitled Farm Workers Living and Working Conditions in South Africa, Key Trends, Emergent Issues and Underlying Structural Problems, as it deals extensively with the issue of evictions and tenure security, and highlights a number of tenure security issues outside of the scope of application of the ESTA Amendment Bill that also need to be considered as a matter of urgency by the Portfolio Committee. While certain allegations are made or repeated, it also needs to be emphasized that government will need to keep a far more reliable database of evictions if the process is to be managed more responsibly and in an evidence-based manner, also through the proposed new legislation. A further point of general comment pertains to general vagueness in a number of areas of the bill, and these need to be clarified either in the bill directly or through the promulgation of regulations that specifically provide clarification on these matters. Such regulations would need to be gazetted for public comment to ensure a fully consultative approach in this regard. An example of the clarification that is required pertains to the whole mediation process that needs to precede any court process, as well as the legal representation that is required for occupiers. Then on clause-by-clause comments, on clause 1, the amendment of section 1, specifically on definitions, and this is part of the clarity or the vagueness that needs to be addressed. Firstly, on family, it is essential, both from a legal perspective as well as from the perspective of the landowner, that there be absolute clarity and certainty as to which persons are regarded as family members of the occupier. Family needs to be defined clearly in the Act. On subsidies, subsidies is substituted in Section 4 with the word tenure grants. The words tenure grants are open to broad interpretation, and ACBIS recommends that the words tenure grants be clearly defined within the bill so as to provide certainty as to their meaning and scope. Also on amendments, clause 2, amendment of section 4 on subsidies, ACBIS welcomes the provision and the introduction of tenure grants as the lack of implementation of section 4 of the Act, which provides for long-term tenure security both on or off-farm, was in the most part due to a lack of dedicated funding by government. Such funds need to be budgeted for specifically in the department's annual budget. Furthermore, on clause 2CD reads, to enable occupiers and former occupiers to, and in just unquote, by including former occupiers, this extends the scope of ESTA and makes it very broad indeed. There is no time frame or qualification as to who falls within the scope of a former occupier, and this places an enormous burden on both landowners and the state alike. In some instances, a property may have been sold a number of times, and a historic eviction of an occupier may have been effected and not disclosed to a purchaser, as this was not material to a contract of purchase and sale at the time. The current owner of a property may not have purchased the property and had this material fact been disclosed, Current owners of affected properties would therefore be unfairly prejudiced if the words former occupiers are added to the section of the bill. ACBIS recommends that the words former occupier be deleted. Alternatively, the clause can be expanded to denote that former occupiers have a right of access to a tenure grant or alternative accommodation accommodation, which is to be provided for by the state on a definitive qualification basis. That is, the right of access to a 10-year grant or alternative accommodation, and is limited to a specific period, example, a 3-year period. In terms of Clause 3, Amendment of Section 6, the rights and duties of occupier. ACRA supports the rights of lawful occupiers to take reasonable measures to maintain their houses, provided that maintenance does not extend to the expansion or erection of new dwellings, as this may impose liability on the landowner. In most cases, the landowner would maintain the farm workers' houses on the farm. However, on some farms, occupiers live in houses that were not built by the farm owner. While landowners have a maintenance duty where housing is provided as a condition of service or to a worker, as a condition of service to a worker, or when they lease out the housing, this duty may not exist in situations where there is no employment or landlord and tenant relationship. This needs to be recognized and provided for in the bill. The reason occupiers cannot be allowed to add or build onto existing houses without the permission of the landowner under the guise of maintenance is that this could result in the landowner incurring liability. Building regulations are applicable to buildings on farms, and the landowner is responsible to ensure that these are complied with, failing which he would incur liability. While ACRA submits that this is in all probability not the intention of this clause, it should be clarified so as to avoid unintended consequences. Maintenance should be limited to essential aspects such as fixing water pipes, leaking roofs, cracks in walls, broken windows, or any other such actions with prior notice to the landowner. ACRA would thus welcome the provision provided that it is qualified to better reflect the real intention. On the amendment of Section 9, limitations on evictions. ACRA is totally opposed to the insertion of Clause 4.1b, as this is a duty that resides fully with the department, and it is currently dealing with this through the Land Rights Management Facility. ACRA fully recognizes the rights of occupiers to legal representation, but this cannot be made a precondition for eviction. The wording of this clause limits the jurisdiction of the court in a situation where a government department fails to comply with the responsibility placed on it by the courts, and this will then be to the detriment of the landowner. This makes no sense from a jurisprudence perspective and needs to be corrected. In addition, there is no provision in the Constitution which guarantees or enforces legal representation in a situation such as this, and the courts cannot and should not be barred from exercising their discretion merely because an occupier was not legally represented. ACRA is strongly of opinion that this provision is an unjustified limitation to the rights of the landowner and will have to be challenged in the Constitutional Court if necessary. Then on the amendment of Section 10, order for eviction of person who was occupier on 4 February 1997. The word "or" in this clause should be changed to "and" to make this clear, as the owner should be on both parties to seek a resolution to their dispute. In addition, and as previously stated, ACRA fully supports the principle of mediation, but a set time frame, 30 days as proposed, should be included in the bill so that the eviction process is not unduly delayed by unsuccessful attempts at mediation. In terms of the following clause, and I quote, is satisfied that the circumstances surrounding the order for eviction is of such a nature that it could not be settled by way of mediation or arbitration. Quote close, the wording is problematic as an arbitrator may not make a binding decision in favor of the landowner where such landowner wishes to evict an occupier. Section 263 of the Constitution clearly states no one may be evicted from their home or have their home demolished without an order of court made after considering all the relevant circumstances. No legislation may permit arbitrary evictions. And in further to that, this section of the Constitution clearly states that an eviction order can only be made by a court, not an arbitrator. Thus, unlike with mediation, arbitration is by its very nature binding. So should a dispute regarding a threatened eviction be referred to arbitration, the arbitrator would only ever be able to rule in favor of the occupier, as the opposite would in fact amount to an eviction. which an arbitrator is not constitutionally authorized to do. This in itself would violate the constitutionally protected audi alteram partem rule, in other words, hearing the other side. So whilst the parties could still attempt to settle the dispute through a non-binding mechanism such as mediation prior to approaching a court, the role of an arbitrator in such a dispute is, in our opinion, redundant. Agnes therefore suggests that the words or arbitration be removed, and this clause should read as follows, and I quote, the owner or person in charge of the occupier have attempted, I'm going to start again, sorry. The owner or person in charge or the occupier have attempted mediation to settle the dispute in terms of section 21 or refer the dispute for arbitration in terms of section 22, and the court is satisfied that the circumstances surrounding the order for eviction is of such a nature that it should not be settled by way of mediation. Quite close. Further, it is recommended that mediators only be appointed from the Independent Mediation Service of South Africa, INSA, which was established in 1984, so as to maintain mediation as a specialist occupation. Professional mediators are members of INSA, and they possess the necessary training and expertise to fulfill such a role. In order to attract experienced and professional mediators, they will have to be remunerated fairly, and the department will have to budget for this. The appointment of mediators needs to be expedited as soon as possible, so as to not unnecessarily delay the process. The bill also needs to clarify the issues of who will initiate the mediation, as well as who will carry the related costs. It is the opinion of ACVS that the department should bear these costs. Then, clause 7, the amendment of section 12, further provisions regarding eviction. This is a new clause. It was not part of the original version of the bill that was tabled at NEDLAC. It is, from our point of view and with all due respect, not nonsensical to believe that a court must rule on future weather conditions, which are often not at all predictable in the time frame foreseen. If the date of the eviction is determined to take place 2 to 3 months from the date of judgment, the court will in no way be able to know what weather conditions will prevail on that day. It is simply not practical to impose such a function on a court. If adverse weather conditions are experienced on the set eviction date, what then happens? Laws need to be clear and implementable, and not create uncertainty and open to all sorts of interpretation and conjecture. ACVS believe that there is no place for such a clause in the bill and that it should be scrapped. To conclude, it is noted that the department is in the process of finalising the socio-economic impact assessment and that the estimated financial implications will be provided on finalisation thereof. ACVS believes that the financial implications that this bill will have are wider than just the financial implications for the state. Both landowners and mortgagees alike will experience a dilution of their property rights, and therefore this bill will have negative financial implications for such parties from a resale perspective for properties where landowners are unable to provide prospective buyers with vacant possession and full beneficial use of the property. ACVS therefore recommends that the SAIA, the socio-economic impact assessment for this bill, includes the financial impact on other stakeholders as well, not just on property owners. ACVS is of the opinion that the bill in its current form prejudices and infringes on the rights of landowners. As a result, the state can expect landowners and or holders of real rights to challenge the more onerous sections within this bill deemed to be prejudicial in the courts, including in the Constitutional Court. ACVS does not believe that is in the interest of taxpayers nor the state for this bill to be enacted without the recommended amendments being implemented. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Chair, for the presentation. Members have been listening to the presentation. The Chair, if we are saying that the bill infringes the rights of the land owners, what about the rights of the occupiers? Because we're talking about two parties here. We're talking about the land owners and the land occupiers. So in other words, they're saying that ESTA doesn't protect the land owners and the farm occupiers. It protects the your farm occupiers only. Can you please unpack that? Then the other one is to me, maybe if you can also assist me on this one. It's straightforward, simple and straightforward. If the court took a decision that I have to be evicted on the 10th, then on the 10th there is no. Must I be evicted? Must the eviction continue? It's simple. The bill is saying farm dwellers must not be evicted during the bad weather condition. That's it. But if the court has taken a decision, that decision must be implemented. But also the issue of the weather, it also must be implemented, because the people who are mostly affected there are women and children. How do you feel if women and children are standing on the road during the rainy condition, they've been evicted on the farm because the court has taken the decision that on the 9th, those people must be taken out of the farm? You see, that is not conducive for those people to look around, to transport their items from the farm to the alternative accommodation, because it's heavily raining. What is your view on that one? Don't you think that the issue of the 30 days mediation be included in the regulation instead of being included in the bill? I'm just asking a question. You also mentioned the issue of the legal representation, that it must not be a pre-condition of the eviction. Why those people have got money, they rush to court? I think this clause is trying to assist those who have not, that they must also be legally represented, according to me. But if you're saying it must not be a pre-condition, but the other one is for the right to be legally represented, the other one must not be a pre-condition, they too must have the right, especially the farm occupier, because those people, number one, they are illiterate, you know. They need people to speak on their behalf. People will be able to stand on their behalf. But if you're saying that it must not be a precondition for eviction, can you please unpack that? The last one. We are amending this, the Principal Act, to correct some of the challenges that we experienced during the implementation of the 1997 Act. The family has arrived here, they've got 30 years staying on the farm. Some of the people who are staying in the farm, they arrive in the farm, they are still young. Those people, you know, they still have the right to extend to increase the number of the family members. But if we are saying that they must maintain, when they arrived in the farm in 1960, building a two-room, are we saying that even now they are not allowed to extend that house to have another two-room if the members of the family have increased? So that when we conclude this thing, we must just move with the same understanding really what is it that the stakeholders are saying with regards to the amendment. Because to me, the family members are increasing. And looking at the definition, what does the family mean? It doesn't mean a wife, a husband, and the two children. We're applicants, of course, my mother, my father, who must stay with me, all those things. Will they be able, what is the privacy, where's privacy in that? Sleeping with the children in one room, the other one is being used at the kitchen, and also in the dining room. Honorable members.
Thank you very much, Chair. I must say, Chair, I'm thanking for not just for your presentation. I must say, Chair, listening to the purchase and going through this presentation, one cannot help but have a distinct feeling that here is someone who absolutely, in terms of his presentation does not care whatsoever for the occupiers or people who are working on that land, you know, and living on that land. I may be wrong, but that's the impression I get. It refers, for example, to the very important report that indeed, as you indicated, reflect the working and living conditions on the farms. It is not expressed whether it is in agreement for the conclusions of this report, but in the same way, in the same breath, the same, we must actually provide, but not provide evidence for eviction that has taken place. For me, it's very, very concerning that when an organization like theirs could project a inhumane view on people like this. You know, for farmers to prosper in this country, it's not only dependent on them, it's also dependent on those who work on the on this farm. You know. So one would expect some form of empathy coming through, but I don't detect this. The issue of family, I expected them, as just indicated, is just saying that this definition must be essentially encompassing a legal perspective. I would have wanted him to respond, because himself, the most important saying, in my understanding, this is what a family constitute a family chair. I think what my other concern is that he's raising an issue with the a possible utilization of a 10-year grant to improve or maintain houses. But he also mentioned that that is the responsibility of the farmer, which one welcomes. Most certainly. One certainly welcomes that, but one would want that to come out much more strongly to say, well, farmers must take a responsibility in maintaining our farms. Because in our experience, where we have gone, all the problems that we visited, the public areas were held, all the people were running and complaining about the fact that the conditions of the places where they are living is extremely bad. Referred to a visit that we have done on a farm where literally there was one house a bit. If it rained, you could just stand outside of the house. Because it made no difference. Because the rain comes through the house the same as it, if you're outside of the house. And the farmer refuses to make any, allow any. Not renovation, but to maintain looking to stop the leaks, etc. So one surely would have expected, with due respect, Mr. Purchase, as you know, as a voluntary organization, guiding farmers to make sure that their businesses are extremely profitable, that they are we come across more and more the main terms of the other side, and not just the one side chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable President, Honorable Mungul.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks, Mr. Purchase. I like to say. You say much of the land has been used as a collateral. Then you proceed to say that any dilution of property rights will undermine the ability of financiers to finance the primary agricultural production sector of the agro-food system, and thus put South Africa at a far greater food security risk. Now, how do you synchronize these two statements? Because the latter one sends a message that says you don't want to share the land. And yet, in the very preceding paragraph to that, you say the function of agribusiness also to ensure that agribusiness plays a constructive role in the country's shared economic growth, development, and transformation. But in the next page, you come across as an institution that doesn't want to share land. Now, where I can't find the two statements, you know, we're speaking to one another. For me, it sounds like you're more concerned about those who already have the land retaining it to themselves, and those who don't should not. Now, property ownership in South Africa was severely compromised, and as such, if you go further to say, I'm on to another issue now, that former occupiers should not be part of the equation. Now, here John worked on somebody's farm for many, many years. Now, he's a former occupier. And if you want to say John should be out of the equation, he's out of the farm, where do you imagine that John is residing? Because from the experience that we picked up during the public participation in practically all provinces is that there's less than 1% of farmers who pay any form of pension to their former workers. Less than 1%. Because halls would be so full of people, and in most cases you'll find that there's hardly any person who says, I was paid so much. Actually, it was one in Uppington who said that my former employer paid us very well. And that was the first one. The other one has merely said that my father was given 4,000 rands, and that's it. So it looks like for certain sections of the population, Akbis says Akhniya, they can go poor, no pension, no sharing of the land, no transformation, because the moment we share the land with them, we will dilute the property portfolio of South Africa, and as such, food production will be compromised. Lastly, it looks like you are happier if food production is reserved for a certain sector of our population. Because here John worked for Federal State for 40 years, and when he goes, gets no pension, you say he should not be considered in the equation. We'll get the responses later tomorrow for the group.
I just don't want to repeat what I said earlier, about the farm workers being workers, and that farm workers are human beings. And when we talk about human rights, we talk about farm workers too. I'm just saying that, but after going through your presentation, there are lots of things that seem good to me, but I'm afraid you're supposed to be a new value, like we're saying that, tell us what is your definition of family, how should we define family? We have defined it so far in the bill, so we want to input. So if you say we should define it, it is already defined that you agree with this definition. or do you have another input in terms of what family is, so that you can advise us, so that when we sit down and make a determination, we may even look into your contribution towards this family. DNRC has given theirs. Everybody has given theirs. I mean, you know, this one we even talked about, my father and his second wife and the third wife, that is part of the family. Are you agreeing with that? Or do you see family as, you know, your mother, son, and children, and that is what a family is? We want to keep your mind on this one so that we may leave this meeting much smarter.
Also take the opportunity to thank the presentation by Mr. Peches on behalf of the organization and others. Like we have been making indications, Chair, earlier, and like our colleagues starting to chair the engagement, I hope that ARP is not in the room for quite a better part of the day, that we engage every stakeholder. And it's only fair that the students in the academic world to come with a thesis, then there's a team of professors, then they will try and they shoot it down, then I've got to defend your thesis. I guess you face the same. I never understood the academia to be subjective and personal, you know. So in the same sense, if you notice, Mr. Peches, quite a number of issues are directed at you. Like my colleagues, I find few issues on which I think I'm in argument, but I want to work with you also page by page. You are saying on the, again, it's unnumbered. I don't expect from you. This course, I do not. Unnumbered. You are a highly professional body of professionals and property owners by your own admission. Now you have not but under introduction, you talk about EFTA having been a controversial piece of legislation. So from where you sit or from with the information you provided, you are saying to us that the problem in the farm working community, as we may have been going all out, was the piece of legislation. There was no problem. In other words, before EFTA, there was tranquil and quietness and calm and everything was right in the farm. Shall I check with you a statement that the situation was boiling in the farms? And Peter Mokaba became infamous for chanting, kill the boer, kill the farmer. But I guess, may his soul rest in peace. If he lived, at any time that he was crucified, he would say, but the farm dwellers are facing worse of situations and the only reaction possible is to fight back. That's how I understood him. I'm his contemporary in terms of the youth activism and structures. And therefore, if we see problem with EFTA, we say, before there was EFTA, there was no problem. And I cite Peter Mokaba to put it to you that there was a big, big problem. EFTA tried to try and bring parties together. Your next paragraph on under introduction just goes straight to property rights. And if I go and invite your comment that lines with a major interest, ABBIES has a major interest in ensuring that property rights are entrenched in the legal framework of the country. And you go further to start a family about any dilution of property rights. I think Chair or someone picked up on this as well, Chair. So the property regime in South Africa from where you sit and your organization is perfect. It's good that we have the have and the don't have in the scheme that there is. Now in scientific terms, they talk about the Gini coefficient and they say South Africa is in the top 5 in the world in terms of the gap between the rich and poor.
Now, your second stanza seems to be saying you want to deeply defend and entrench that and any dilution of that. Now, I'm not talking legally. I could talk legally, but you can't be an activist if you do not have some semblance of a legal mind. But therefore, I'm talking social policy. Would you think that South Africa would be a prosperous society, a comfortable society, where property rights are simply not diluted? Those of us who have, I've got about four cars, né? And I don't even want to mention their brand. So those of us who have must continue having, and those who have nothing must continue to squash. Now, I'm just reading English and inviting you, and inviting you in a very humble manner, to please defend your stance. So any dilution of my four cars to really share with families who have nothing, who are squashed in the taxis, in the trains, in what is called gurus in the countryside. It's a highly H100 that carries about 22 people at the back. It's a buggy. No other form of transport can suit those conditions. So any dilution of property rights, really, you really mean that? You really mean that there must be no redistribution of wealth, no redistribution of land? Now, in your response, you will indicate, but I'm saying, as it stands, this is the meaning that it lends in, remember, English is my fourth language. That is Bolo. My first language is Bolo. The second one is Xhosa. The third one is Zulu. And then English becomes the fourth one. But from what I read, any dilution of property rights, I could upfront indicate, if it stands like that, I cannot see even the least court that would stand with that. Because Advocate Mosenege, the deputy president, who just resigned, was clear that, in fact, I do have also a clause, somebody didn't page before, Chair, a clause from the Constitution that talks to a fair dispensation insofar as property rights. So how you have written it, couched it, in my little reading of English, people really always praise me that I'm not bad in English. But it proved me bad in this case that the dilution meant something else that you talk about. General issues, Chair, the page. General comments. The heading is general comments. Now, while eviction is an emotive, the last sentence, the other general comment, is an emotive, sensitive, and distressing matter, and act is recognized, it must be acknowledged that eviction in certain circumstances are necessary and warranted, and must be recognized and allowed by government within the necessary legal framework. I just want to ask you, what circumstances are those? I may not necessarily be different if you've been listening to me throughout the day. I may not necessarily, but I think it's a conversation. Let's talk to the council, let's talk to ourselves. What circumstances do you see as those that would be necessary and warrant? I made an example about the OEMs outside Delta and PE, where even the workers were saying, we agree that there should be restructuring and right-sizing. But please bring your own examples of those, because we must come with a compelling case at policy level before the legal level. The legal level merely the shape and parameter of policy as the content. So what are these circumstances for evictions that Act is actually proposing? And I jump quite a number of pages and go to the one that talk clause by clause comment, clause 3. Again, unfortunately, the pages are numbered. Please take your secretaries for training. The Home Suggestion is not meant to be anything. For training so that they number the pages. I know it was not you typing, but the secretary to the outfits must really show the great standing, professional standing of outfits. Now it's unnumbered. We want to engage in discussion. Rights and duties of occupier. Now, the last stanza there. The reason occupiers cannot be allowed to add or build an existing house without the permission of the landowner under the guise of maintenance. Now, what is about language there under the guise of maintenance? Here are people who are fixed in a two-room hut, and when we try to add or do anything, it's seen as a guise of maintenance. However little my English is, I'm clear that this is a problematic phrasing. Because for the guise of maintenance, it's people trying to make sure that they have a habitable place. It could result in the landowner incurring liability. Are you now talking on behalf of everyone, on behalf of justice, on behalf of in law they talk about a reasonable man. I'm not talking about everyone if you really, just merely worried about land owner incurring liability. But you're not saying the land owner is so rich because of the labor of these tenants and dwellers. Are you fair and are you socially and economically fair in that affection as an organization? Not the person with the pictures. I know you'll be very, very fair, the person I know. But I'm talking there, your organization, is it fair when it looks into anything that the landowner must incur liability? The landowner is not prepared. How are we going to build in South Africa when we are not prepared? I take about 50% of my money that I get as parliamentary. It never goes to the Nguni. It goes to the people. But I want to, I can profit. You know? So here we have landowners who would not be prepared to incur liability for their own people who are making them rich. Who are making them rich. Is that the correct logic? Is that the thinking of the upbeat? Or perhaps you want to, you would rather go back to ask to ask this, to say, let's do more. Bursaries for these farm people. What are, let's produce lawyers, what? A mayor, like in Howick, good, what that has been. You have a mayor from the farm thing there. His kitchen is 1 by 1 square meter. I go to Beverton, you can really test it and throw me in social media if I'm lying. The kitchen of the mayor in Howick is 1.5 by 1.5 square meter, and it is falling like this. I have the picture here, you know. So, but you seem to be arguing against incurring liability. So, are you sure you're sitting on the right socio-political logic there? And shall I see only two more or three? There is an argument for eviction that I'm picking up. I have asked a question already. The legal representation, again, the page starts with clause for amendment limitation on eviction, right? But it says the act is fully recognized the right of occupiers to legal representation. But this cannot be made a precondition, really, Mr. Petty, to your name now, when your organization says you, your own integrity, that you would love. Now, they say nicely in vernacular, which means kicking and screaming. These people, there can be no precondition that they be evicted after having been legally represented. If the people have got to be evicted without even a legal representation, that's the dispensation your organization wishes for South Africa. Really? I'd like to retire in politics now, in professional politics for 15 years. I'd like to join your organization, but really, is it your mind, is it your thought that the people, there can be no precondition that people be evicted with the representation. In other words, even without representation, if in Gawichiwilan, kicking and screaming, they must be evicted. This is my reading of English. Like I said, one or two persons have said, I'm not really there. Unless if I interpret it wrongly. But you are saying no precondition for legal representation. You know, Chair, I want this discourse to come out very, very clear, because it will help the body of this to also perhaps relook certain issues. You know, in traditional communities, in stick fighting, as boys, I would throw him his two sticks, I would take my sticks and say, that's fine. I would never fight with him without his sticks. Just as a moral value, that the fighting spirit is level. So here, if I read you well, but I would be very keenly listening. You are saying there can be no precondition for people to be legally represented. So poor souls must be kicked out, kicking and screaming. I don't know if I get, and if that's the case, we will accept your submission, but it is obvious we will fundamentally differ with it, if that is the case, unless if you explain it nicely to us. And I end up with you, I skip one and end up with where you are quoting that no one will be evicted from their home or have their home demolished without an order of court made after contact all the relevant circumstances. In fact, I would have loved you to underline, but you have not underlined this one. Perhaps you would love us to review that one. I think it's in the Constitution 263. No legislation may permit arbitrary eviction. That's the most important. But you didn't underline it. And I'm influencing and in conversation with you to ask that it is the most important and it is the most correct Mandela might be shaking in his grave when he hears that no legislation permits arbitrary evictions. He would think that that's a fair South Africa. But you don't seem to have picked that up and to be fly with, because that's what we will need. If you... Sorry, be patient. It was my last point here to just persuade. We were persuading Mr. Farage, who was sitting there, and he took some pressure and not. We persuaded Kosatu to sitting there to say, why are you giving this concession? They took the note. Please reason along us and send us this document. At the present moment, like Mr. Mandela said and others before me, it's not celebrable. We will take it as a submission, but the body thought of it leaves very, very much to be desired, and would like your stakeholders to really rethink the dispensation at the farms. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. While Mr. Pitchens will be responding to some of the clarity-seeking questions from members, are farmers not adding a burden to themselves when they demolish people's houses? Are they not adding a burden to themselves? Farmers, farm owners, are they not adding a burden to themselves when they demolish farm dwellers' houses? Without even the court order, for that matter. The patient can come in.
Thank you, Chair.
Oh, another member this side. Oh, my eyes will look so long.
On the wrong side of the
door. Honorable
Madam, thank you, Chair, for giving me this opportunity to say one word. My apologies for joining the. Chairperson, let me just welcome the presentation from ASPI by Mr. Pitches. Thank you very much. At least we know what happened. What is the thinking of your organization? In your background, you were talking about development in transformation. You know, I think Mr. Patrick, these amendments are focusing more on the rights of the family. But in your presentation, I haven't seen any positive attitude about this amendment. Only what I see are your clauses, actually. Are your comments about this bill only, but not showing any remorse to the infantile about their situation. I saw in your concluding remarks, you focus more on financial implications that this bill will have to landowners and the mortgages. You know, bill, we need more recommendations around the. More positive recommendations about this, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Makaza. Honorable Pitchens.
Thank you, ma'am. It's been a really good, they're interested in our process. I think there's quite a lot of misunderstanding. I want to start off with that, just a few general comments. And I want to refer to the slide I have up there on the introduction, in which we indicated that we participated in this process, also in NEDLAC, and that we support the bill fully, except for those issues that I raised. And one must also see the other side of it. We support the whole bill on the issues that we have agreement on, that we reached agreement on in NEDLAC. And I think you should, I don't know if you have the NEDLAC report, But you must, and I said it here, so you must understand what the NEDLAC report says, what those areas of agreement are that we support. So we are not negative against this bill. I also said previously, in the previous slide, I think it is, that one. Agnes in principle supports the need for farm laborers and occupiers to be protected against illegal evictions in terms of the Prevention of Illegal Evictions Act. Full stop. So I think I've been misconstrued to a large degree. I am not, and I want to repeat it, I am not insensitive to farm workers. Absolutely not. In fact, I am very sensitive to their situation. I also want to say, in terms of transformation, we strongly believe in transformation. We drive transformation, but I want to say that perhaps we have a different idea of what that transformation entails. We believe, and I'm talking in broad sense before I get to the specific issues that we raised, we believe of broadening property rights. In our response to the Green Paper and in subsequent dealings where we proposed various land reform models to government, including the Agbaza model, including the right of first refusal, etc., the whole issue is of broadening property rights to previously disadvantaged persons. That creates wealth. If you go and look at property rights, the stronger property rights are in a country, the more wealthy that country is. So the idea of shared property rights, with all due respect, doesn't go down for me. There are various international studies that I can refer you to. Also the Institute for Property Rights that brought out a report that reflects this very clearly. So we are for property rights. We make no excuse for that, because we believe that creates the basis for shared growth, it creates the basis for wealth creation, and we cannot move away from that. Shared property rights do not bring you wealth, and they do not bring investment. And I think this is where we have a fundamental difference in our approach. We want to broaden property rights. We have strongly, many times said that government must, as with the Kyalong project, as the ANC in many areas have done in Pretoria, give title deed to people that are renting houses in townships, for example. We are strongly for that. So we must understand what property rights are and how we want to broaden that. And that is what creates wealth, and that is what creates a growth in the economy. Okay, I'll get to the more specific issues. Firstly, landowners versus occupiers' rights. I think what we clearly said and what we intimate is that there's got to be a balance of rights between the property owners and the occupiers. We clearly said it's not just one-way traffic. We said we must protect labourers against illegal evictions. And it's clear on the slide that's up at the moment. So we understand that there are conflicting interests there sometimes, and I think this is what the debate is about, and is to create the right balance between what is property rights, owners' rights, and what are the rights of the occupiers in that process. In terms of the weather, I understand your argument. What I think one must try and word it differently. And I understand fully your argument that if it snows or whatever on that day, it's not going to work. But then you must have a lengthier period within, from the court order to when the election must take place, so that people can plan and do that movement in that eviction in a better space and time. But you can't leave it to the last day, and then you have a snowstorm, and then say no, and then there can't be a mechanism to move the person. So all I'm saying, then you must look at a different mechanism of wording it to ensure that there's more than sufficient time for the eviction then to take place, so that weather doesn't become a dominant part in that decision. And I take your point that one must try and word it differently, but somehow you must have some cut-off date in that, because a court order which would have to work on that basis, and we can make it more lenient in some way. Then on the 30 days, yes, I think I did mention that we would need to look at regulations. And for example, the 30 days, doesn't matter if it's in the law, in the Act itself, or whether it goes into the regulations, I just think there must be some sort of limit in terms of when mediation can take place, and then, and if it can't be settled, then obviously it's got to go to court. So I think it's just, it can be either in the regulations or in the well, that's immaterial. It's going to have exactly the same effect. On legal representation, I think you must construe that I'm saying I'm trying to withhold legal representation. The law makes provision for anybody, even if you are indicted for murder, that you can represent yourself. So all I'm saying is that you cannot make it a precondition that he has to be represented. If a person wants to represent himself in such a case, you are now prohibiting from representing himself. And the law makes provision for anybody to can represent himself in a legal case. So what I'm saying is, I'm not trying to preclude somebody from being represented. What I'm just saying, the legal situation in South Africa makes provision for you to represent yourself. And I don't think, from a legal aspect, I don't think the legal fraternity would agree that you have to. I think this is the first time that I've seen this in legislation, that you have to tell somebody that he has to have representation. We make more than, the point is not to preclude representation, and not even remotely. It's just to be in line with normal legal practice in South Africa. That's where the jurisprudence comes in. Then on extension of homes, outbuildings, the point that we're trying to make there is you cannot arbitrarily just start adding on building to the house that you have or the home that you have. Farmers also have to submit, and you know that living in towns, if you want to build extra rooms or a garage or whatever, you have to submit plans to the municipality for approval, just so on farms. So all we're saying is if people erect buildings on farms without submitting plans for approval to the municipality, then the owner, the property owner, becomes liable for that. He then has to break them down, whatever the court order goes, or whatever goes against him, if it's not built to standards and according to the plans that are submitted. All we're saying is there must be a mechanism that ensures that if there are alterations or outbuildings built or whatever buildings are built, that it is subject to normal practice of submitting of plans, etc., etc. Then, the family definition. Family definition is obviously a difficult one. We discussed this in NEDLAC, and where do you draw the line in this? And it's very difficult to say. I know from a cultural point of view, more from a Caucasian or a European type of setup, it's your immediate family. But I know that there is the concept of extended families, etc. So where do you draw the line? I can have a guess, but I would say family is probably all those in that direct family, immediate family, plus it can be siblings and parents. But once you start going into nieces and cousins and second cousins, where do you draw the line? It can become arbitrary, and that's a very difficult one to argue, and I think it will probably be difficult for you to draw, because you're going to probably have to make some sort of call on that in the process. So I'm sensitive to that issue. While it's discussed at NEDLAC, it is a difficult issue. Just on the inhumane view, I've been labelled a little bit here, and certainly that is not our position. We do not want to be inhumane, absolutely not. I want to make that absolutely very clear. We believe what we present is a balanced view, we don't want to be, we obviously look at the other side too, and that is why we have said clearly that we support the principle and we support the legislation, except for those issues that we've highlighted that we believe need to be addressed. On the dilution of property rights, I think I've addressed that in the beginning. We believe from the private sector basically that property rights are absolutely essential to make South Africa grow. We believe very, very strongly in the broadening of property rights. We have on record of saying that many times. I believe that there are many ways that government can broaden property rights, and that they are not doing it. I think the in the townships, rental houses and rental parcels, I cannot understand with all due respect why those haven't been transferred title deed, as has happened with Kailan and Horace area in Pretoria. The ANC brought that in just before the election. There are many areas with, that they have started doing that. But that is too little, too late as far as I'm concerned. Then, on synchronized statements, that is around the food issue. I think the gentleman that asked has left. I think while we say that the system in South, the agri-food system in South Africa is built on property rights that allow you to collateralize the land that you own, the property right that you own, against a production loan. So you get a production loan so that you can produce, and then you repay that loan, basically. And this is the farm debt of the 160 billion that I alluded to. Now, farm debt roughly is somewhere in the region of about 40% of the value of land. That is the figure, the official figure from the Department of Agriculture. So obviously, it's sizable that that land is used in this collateralization. Once property rights are compromised, and they're significantly compromised, it becomes very difficult for a lender to lend or to lend money to a farmer, because that property, the value of that property, gets compromised. And then, if that farmer forecloses on his loan, and because he can't meet his obligations, then that property is less than the value that was lent against, and the banks of the financial systems can lead huge losses. So that is the problem that we have. And if property rights are compromised, the whole value of farms drops, and then the ability to lend money to produce sufficient food for food security is compromised in the process. I think one must just understand how the system works in South Africa and why it can have compromises in the process. I think that the question is, the statement was made that we don't want to share the land. I think that's a very broad statement. I think we want to share the land, but not the property right. So we want to extend property rights to more people. More black people must own property in South Africa. There's no question. And there are more. It's how we get to that position which is the issue. And then the land is shared in the broader context, but it's not shared on a specific parcel of land that has a title deed, etc. And I think that concept we must understand when we talk of shared land. I think we support transformation very strongly. There are very many examples of a certain Agri-BEE Charter Council where we've driven BEE as a focus point for transformation. I work closely with the Department of Rural Development and other departments to try and drive transformation. To say that we're anti-transformation is, with all due respect, totally wrong. How we want to use the bill, how we want to do transformation, I think there we may differ. Whether it's from what approach we want to use, I won't go into that detail now. Okay, then on the former occupiers issued, and statements were made about the less than 1% issues. I can understand that this is a sensitive issue, but I think you can also understand the argument to the other side, that where do you draw the line in terms of former occupiers? I mean, former occupiers could be 20 years down the line or back. And that farm could have been traded 3 or 4 times in that time. And now the former occupier comes back. Where do you draw the line in terms of a former occupier to his rights of tenancy on that land? And I think we must just be sensitive to look at the case from both sides to understand what is workable and what is not workable. Okay, the food production compromise, I think I've spoken to. Family definition, I've spoken to. Esther legislation I've spoken to, because we supported that, it says so clearly on my presentation. Property rights I've addressed. We need stronger property rights, more prosperous society. Okay, then, the question was asked, what circumstances warrant eviction? Under the current dispensation, under the current Esther Act, there are various circumstances that warrant eviction. It's common knowledge that certain farm dwellers are evicted are legally evicted from property rights when they no longer work on the farm, or for some other reasons they might be fired from in the process or whatever. So there are currently legal reasons for eviction, and I presume that those would similarly be legal in the future. So the current dispensation actually answers that question. Then on maintenance on and outbuildings, I think and ask for fair and balanced. Yes, I've no problem in being fair and balanced in that. I think I've mentioned that. Yes, arbitrary eviction, we support that. There cannot be arbitrary eviction, and the law clearly states that. And we say we've got to work within in legislation that does provide for eviction under specific circumstances, but that also protects the farm worker. So I am sorry that if it's construed as not being positive. I think we try to make positive contributions to the amendment bill. That is why we supported the act by and large, or the bill in NEDLAC, and I said that up front. And I'm going to say it again. We supported and we worked fully on this in NEDLAC. We sat how many meetings? Probably 10 meetings in NEDLAC on this bill, and supported it by and large. What I've just addressed here are those issues where we couldn't get agreement. Now it looks as though that's just negative, but it's not just negative. There's 70-80%, 90% of the bill which is positive that we have supported. And I want you to see the bigger picture around that. So my it's not to be negative. It's about balancing the rights between the farm owner and the rights of the dweller. So yes, I hope that helps to clarify some of the issues that have been raised. Thank you, ma'am.
I think there's one, that's the issue of the possible transmission of the Chinese branch.
Oh, the...
And also that the statement that indicated as a contribution, I think it's only true.
On the 10-year grant. Now, I think, I'm not sure what the issue is there, but we support the 10-year grant. I think we said so. We believe that government can play a bigger role in that, and perhaps it was one of the weaknesses of the current ESTA Act that we didn't have a 10-year grant or to assist evictees in the process. So we believe that, and we also said there that where we have formerly occupier problems, that we can extend that 10-year grant also to former occupiers. I think it's set fairly clearly in my presentation. So that is something that certainly can be recommended. I just want to see if I missed something else there. I don't know if that answers your question. And the other one, you said there was another one? Okay.
Question.
Okay. Yes, I think controversial is the two things, and I said it there, partly because of poor implementation. There were no databases kept. There was no system within government which one could track evictions, whether legal or illegal property. And I think this caused a lot of tension, and that actually provided a reason for coming up with an alternative legislation. So I think from the implementation side, it caused friction, and that will obviously cause a controversial, because it wasn't enacted properly, perhaps. I think controversial piece of legislation, also because the question was whether it really served the purpose it was supposed to serve. So you can construe it in different ways around implementation, around the design of the piece of legislation, and was it effective in what it was supposed to do? I think that's where it's perhaps controversial.
Relationship between the farm owners and the farm dwellers. The other thing that I think I have to clarify is that when a legislation is being presented to Parliament, NEDLAC has its own processes, and as Parliament we've got our own processes. So the processes are not the same. Then, let me just indicate that to our stakeholders that your presentation were an eye-opener to some of the issues that we have raised here. We know that in most cases you are on the ground, in most cases you are in Parliament, but holding the public hearing was an eye-opener for us, and also the presentation that we've made here today was an eye-opener for us to look at some of the issues that needs to be inserted on that bill to protect both parties. I'm still saying both parties, the farm owner and the farm dweller. Therefore, we need to make sure that we build that relationship between the farm owners and the farm dwellers, and make sure that they maintain that particular relationship. At the end of the day, when this bill passed into an act, I think the department has noted that one of the challenges that have been mentioned is that is the poor implementation, the enforcement. You know, there's no enforcement. There's no one who has been charged. There's no one who has been jailed. You know, there's no one who has been. People just got, you know, they violate the act, they're above the law, they do whatever what they want to do at whatever particular time they want to do it. At the end of the day, they are not accountable to anyone. We need to make sure that we really liberate the farming communities, we got that relationship between the farm owners and the farm dwellers, so that at the end of the day, the farming communities must see to it that South Africa belongs to all of us. South Africa belongs to all who live in it. If we're saying we are free, the farming communities must also be free. They must have access to roads, they must have water, they must have electricity. You know, they must just live a normal life. But at the end of the day, if after more than 20 years, you still hear people that are able to build a toilet, when there's a dispute between the two parties, the water is being cut. You know, you can't even dig a hole. You are being fenced. Even Kruger National Park, it's got a lot of square kilometers land. Animals can move, not freely from each corner to the other corner. But if there are people who are being fenced like this, if you know they are just in a cave, then it means that there's a problem. We need all to work together to make sure that really farming communities are being liberated. Thank you very much. Another member's opportunity tomorrow with the presentation from various departments. Thank you very much, Chief Land Clearing Commissioner, the team.